The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
November 30, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And yeah, I what is that, the last day of November? I guess so. You know what? I don't even care. I know little kids know how many days there are in each month. I just... What is the difference? Did the sun rise today? Can I observe the moon, and do I know what day it really is? Maybe I'll get into that on another show. Tonight, it's Woden's Day, Wednesday. It is the wild card, and glad to have two return guests. This is going to be an interesting combination, though, because usually I get a lot of zen out of my hour two guest, okay? and he usually calms me down. I'm going to ask him about a few things, though, because I don't know what's going on. Max Egan in the second hour. So you guys always love when Max shows up. I love when Max shows up. He's one of those podcasters that I actually go and check out his work. So a lot of podcasters, I like a couple of things they do, but I don't have time to listen to everybody's show. Max's stuff, I actually go check out. And anyway. So second hour guest, Max Egan, tonight, Wednesday. And in the first hour, we got Addy Ads with us. Now, if you don't know who Addy Ads is, you haven't been listening to my show for the past, at least a year. Because I know we've been bringing him on for at least a year. And he is an investigative journalist, interesting author. He has done some fascinating work, traveled around a bit. And even though I don't necessarily agree with all the angles that he covers, I love the fact that he's actually doing the work. So there you go. Really happy when he was standing by at the Ghislaine Maxwell trial and all that. But that's not the only thing Addy does. He's not one of those guys that only gets heated up when, you know, there's a Jeffrey Epstein story out there, unlike some people who I'm not going to name. Anyways, Addy, first off, man, I know we got you on the phone and everything, and it's probably hard to listen to me on a phone. I appreciate that, and glad that you're here. But you got something else going on, and I cannot always read everybody's articles, but apparently you've been writing some articles that have something to do with a bar fight in Brazil. And I don't know what's going on, but I'm anxious to hear and always anxious to catch up with you. And who knows, maybe we'll get into some selection discussion, you know, because we do have that runoff in Georgia, and I know you know people here as well. But, first off, how you doing tonight, Addy Ads?
I'm doing great, Chuck. Thanks for having me on. It's actually quite easy to do the phone calls. I'm often on my Bluetooth throughout the day, so it's not really a change in habit for me. But, glad to be on the show. And it's been a couple months, I think, since we connected, so it's good to reconnect. I got to say, that's where I'm going next, is Georgia, to cover the runoff.
Ah, so you got to get here by January 6th, right? January
6th? Tuesday.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, we did start early voting here. But, oh, my God. You know, one thing you've been spared is these ridiculous campaign commercials everywhere. I'm finding it kind of entertaining because Brian Kemp is now actually doing commercials for Herschel Walker. And they're showing up even on children's programming here, which is hilarious because, you know, if 5-year-olds are watching, you know, how to count and little moral lessons on not PBS, but on local stations, I don't see why they have to be hit with, you know, Herschel Walker's not a good guy. Well, Herschel Walker is a good guy during the commercial breaks, but apparently 5-year-olds might vote in Georgia. I don't know. It's a weird thing going on here. Anyway, we'll get into that. I want to hear about this bar fight in Brazil. What in the hell, Addy Ads? What are we talking about? Did you go to Brazil and get into a bar fight? What's up?
Well, yeah, it wasn't planned, but it probably wasn't the coolest bar fight. But as far as possible honey trap situations go, it was definitely unexpected. But I was only there 5 days, a little over 5 days, 5 days and some change. I was supposed to be there until the 28th, just a few days ago, and we actually had considered extending as well, and that obviously.
Oh, wow. You know, every time we're about to discuss something that might swirl around the CIA, somebody's phone line goes dead. I love this. Let's see what I can do. I might be able to rejoin Addy Ads on the phone here. Let's see what happens.
I can hear you loud and clear, Chuck.
Excellent. Okay, so look, you made a loaded statement before I lost you. And you obviously know what a loaded statement is, but when you said honey trap and circumstances, and then we had to change our schedule, there are a whole lot of things you could interpret from that barrage there. If you don't know what a honey trap is, guys, welcome to the show. I'm sure you're new here, but honey trap. Let me stop you there for you're saying you had to change travel plans. Let's start from the beginning. What is it that you were down in Brazil doing? I mean, was this vacation or were you covering something?
No, I was sent there by the National File. I started writing for them a little over a month ago. And, yeah, it was we just went to Brazil. And it was on less than a day's notice. On Sunday, when I woke up, I didn't know that, the next day I would be there. And as I mentioned, we were supposed to be there till the 28th at least. But that changed. And, you mentioned the honey trap. We're working pretty much nonstop except for Friday morning. We took a few hours to relax. It was the first sunny day, and because the rest of the time it was raining, and that night it was actually hailing briefly for probably half an hour or so, and it was hailing. So kind of crazy weather there. It's kind of their spring / rainy season, so it wasn't hot so much as it was just a swamp. It was a bog literally on the first day.
What were you there to cover? What was the assignment? You were sent there by the National File, which, yes, you've written for a bunch of different publications, but this is one of the newer ones that you and I haven't gotten a chance to discuss. I think you told me off air that you might be writing for them at some point, but so this is one of the newer ones. They paid for you to go down there, which is cool. This usually means that you got an organization that's very serious about what they're doing. Right. I mean, the first sign about if they're serious is if they pay you. The second sign is if they actually pay an expense or take care of something like sending you somewhere. What were they sending you there for? Or can you talk about that right now?
Yeah. It was to cover the demonstrations / protests / manifestations in Brazil, throughout the country. But particularly Brasilia is where we were. We didn't have time to go anywhere else, although we had considered it. But the reason for that is that's the capital of the military headquarters, so there was a lot of people gathering there. It was growing by the day when we left. But I'm actually going to check in with those guys very shortly, so we'll see what the status is.
Okay, so just again for the listeners, I realize Americans don't a lot of times don't pay attention to Brazil, but because I was a big fan of Sepultura, and Max Cavalera is not only a heavy metal artist but a political activist. He made me pay attention to Brazil in the 1990s, and I gotta say the dynamics of what goes on there. And the outside interference by various nation states, a lot of times the United States. But anyway, this is what goes on. Brazil is a hotbed of political activity that, quite honestly, is ignored in North America a lot. So I'm really fascinated by this, and sad that I was not reading these articles, because I'm sure you wrote about this a bit already. I follow your work, but I'm off and on because sometimes I'm going down other rabbit holes, and you realize toward the end of the month of November, every year, I'm stuck in JFK land. So, all of my research time and vetting, and I was recording videos for conferences and stuff like that. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know that you were going to Brazil or that you had gone. So this is all new to me. But Brazil in general, just for the listener, again, even I don't cover it as I should, because it is very important. It's like a pressure point in South America that, again, they intentionally, the Western news outlets will have you ignore it. So the idea that there is protests going on, the people are getting directly involved in things, you're not meant to notice this, you Americans. Okay, but it is part of the reality, and it's a constant. You dispute anything I just said, Addy?
No, I'd say that's pretty accurate, Chuck. You know, the United States and the CIA has a history of meddling in elections worldwide, and in particular Southern South American, Central America, Latin America, a history of toppling left-leaning populists and installing dictators. And here it almost seems like it's the opposite. So it's a very interesting situation and a lot of political unrest in the country right now.
Well, and it's opportunism. Okay, so recently we've been treated to this idea that, you know, like the Biden administration cut this deal. And make no mistake, this is a connected issue. Cut this deal with Venezuela, okay? Now, that is something, a bone of contention that, again, you're meant to ignore in the West, because pay no attention to it. As long as Exxon's happy, we're fine. Now, as long as Chevron's happy, we're fine. It doesn't matter which strong arm we support there, okay? And by the way, Brazil falls victim to this as well. Now, they have different natural resources than, say, Venezuela, which, again, as I've tried to focus on many times, is oil, but there's still a very good centralized choke point, okay, for a lot of things, a lot of trafficking, okay? And I'm not just talking human trafficking, but a lot of things move around through Brazil, and this is why the United States is always happy to support the people that are going to do the job for them. All right, now, you may or may not dispute that, Addy, but but I'm telling you, that's how I see it. And kind of dangerous, really, for an independent reporter to go to Brazil in the first damn place. So kudos to you for not being afraid to do so. Because sometimes, you know, I've heard stories, and even guys going down there to cover music festivals have gotten roughed up by different, you know, allegedly government elements and stuff like this. So kind of an interesting place for you to land in the first place. Anyway, let's get back to the story. So you're there and you're trying to get a handle on all this. And obviously you're there with a couple of guys and maybe you're looking for local contacts that people have, or you're meeting up with people that previously your contacts or you had spoken to, you know, via phone or whatever. But so you're trying to get, you know, look, show me where things are. Explain to me what's going on. Let me know where the next protest is. I mean, is this the sort of thing you're in the midst of doing and then you end up in a bar at some point?
Yeah, it was Friday night, and I was on Lee's show again today, and I was on his show on this Friday, and so I was late to this interview that I was going to do at a local bar and restaurant, and my security guy went ahead of me. Probably beat me there by like half an hour or so, maybe 25 minutes, and so I Ubered after the show, and I get there, and there's an FBI agent, a woman whose name is Kristen Parkhouse, and then a man who says he works for the State Department, the U.S. State Department embassy in Brasilia, named Miguel Contreras. And
okay, so
immediately,
so
honestly, Bill, Chuck, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I just wanted to interrupt you one last time and let you tell the story after this. Just quick red flag for my listeners. Yeah, the guy traveling around with other government agents like FBI people who says he's working for the State Department is likely not necessarily getting his paycheck from the State Department. he's usually the CIA guy that they, you know, put there under diplomatic cover. Now, I'm not saying that this gentleman is directly a CIA guy. I don't know that for certain. I've never heard of him before. But, or maybe I have. It doesn't matter. The thing is, I will not confirm nor deny. You understand, this is the kind of guy that is going to be walking around with an FBI agent. And even though the FBI is generally seen as a domestic organization, I'm going to tell you right now, They deploy people all over the world. And when they are working with State Department assets, which would be logical, you know, in the normal above ground, like, you know, not shadowy world of government stuff, you would think, well, a State Department person must have to go around with the FBI. But again, this is perfect cover for CIA people to, well, do what they do. Okay. So, if you listen to my show and you pay attention to that analysis, that stuff that I do a lot of times, then I'm very sure you guys know where this might be going. So, Eddie, sorry to interrupt again. I just wanted to make sure we slowed it down and got it through to the listeners. So anyway, State Department guy.
Of course.
State Department guy and FBI lady are in the bar, and your security guy is there with them. Okay. So you arrive.
Yeah, and then, Yeah, we get there. The bar owner is also at the table, and he's the younger guy. He's 33. His name is Renato Tibet. Okay. And I was there to interview two local conservative politicos, a campaign manager, and a lawyer. And I was also supposed to interview the head of the conservative students group, local group. And again, I was late, and he had to probably go to class or something. And so he left, and you know, went well. We probably talked to him for about half an hour. You know, very open-ended questions as I do. And Renato Tibet translated for us. And he was sitting to my right. And I'm going to post it. I haven't had time. I have been nonstop go, go, go since I got back. But I'm going to post it. It's, it wasn't high priority at the time, but I'll probably get that out this weekend. Anyways.
Okay.
So we're chit-chatting for a bit. And I'm talking to Renato, and he tells me that he's the cousin of Simone Tibet, who placed third in the election behind, according to the results, Bolsonaro and Lula. Mm-hmm. And that he also stands to make a lot of money if Lula takes power. And it was at this point in the conversation that Parkhouse, the lady, she's probably like early 50s,
okay.
She interjects in the conversation, and she said, "You would make a good CIA agent." And I thought that was an interesting comment.
Who did she say that to?
She said that to me.
To you? Well, now that's fascinating because, all right, first of all, that's a bunch of BS because in that circumstance, all right, Addie is using a translator, which doesn't show that he has familiarity with where he is, you know, so well because the way they speak in Brazil, he's in a country and he's not quite familiar with the way they speak. Now, I mean, you have some use of Spanish, but you might not be able to speak like Brazilians do or fully comprehend what they're saying. So you're not looking
right.
Good for your situational awareness in a foreign country. So I don't see where she's coming up with you're a good CIA agent, especially if you're asking open-ended questions and you're operating as a journalist. Now, there are behaviors you could be exhibiting that, you know, that somebody might say that to you. But also, she's saying this to you in front of other people, right? Which
yeah,
is,
in front of Renato. Yeah, yeah.
Now, that almost
is right.
Now, I'm just evaluating this as you're telling the story. That almost seems like now what I want to do, actually, is make other people nervous about you. You because as soon as you mention that kind of thing anywhere in Central or South America to certain people, and I'm imagining some of these people could be some of the people you're talking to, you're going to make them nervous when they hear CIA because just by hearing that, they automatically know the history that goes behind that. I mean, look, all you got to do, and it's not just Iran-Contra, okay? There's a lot of different misadventures in Central and South America where eventually somebody can tie it to the CIA, okay? So mentioning that, it's almost like trying to tie you to a gang affiliation in an urban city. Yeah, well, you know, you'd be a great gang member. Okay, I'm going to attach all kinds of crap that goes along with what's gone on in this city now for the past 20 years to that. And really what it sounds like is she's trying to stir the pot among a mixed group of people while you're in an unfamiliar situation. That's what that sounds like to me strategically, as opposed to, because, you know, some people might have heard that and said, oh, what, is she trying to recruit you? No, she's not. What she's doing is she's messing with you and trying to stir up the situation. And, of course, you use a woman to do this because still in Central and South America, a woman can do that and maybe not immediately face a physical attack from somebody who might be extremely hostile to what she just said, right? They'll turn around and turn their attention to the guy with her instead of her. She'll be able to walk away from that situation after, well, acting as a provocateur. So, all right, this is my analysis. Sorry, Addy. I need to throw this in as we go because I have a feeling this story is going to get even, well, it's going to get more odd as you go. But please, go ahead.
Either way, it you know, interrupted the flow of the conversation. I thought maybe she might have been getting uncomfortable with what Renato was telling me, because he was drinking during this time. But then Miguel Contreras, who was sitting to my left, stood up and he's like, okay, let's go to the, it's called the Jungle Bar, and which is, it doesn't matter the name, but the name of the first restaurant is Dobie. It's like, or Dobe. It's like Kobe, but with a D. And we drive over. It's probably not too far. It's probably 10 minutes or so. And it's a U.S. government diplomatic plated car. And he brags to us during the course of the car ride how we're basically untouchable from Brazilian authorities. And we get there and we sit down and we ordered a bit of food, and like 5 minutes after arriving, a woman who was probably 23, I would guess, she's redheaded, and she writes on a napkin a note to my security guy, and it says, I think you're handsome, here's my phone number, message me if you want to. And he has a girlfriend, so he says no. And Contreras basically spends the next 20 to 25 minutes trying to convince him to go and walk over there. It's probably 20 feet away, a different table. And then another girl who we later figured out was the girlfriend of Renato, also, you know, does persuading. And then after he finally goes over there, that Renato's girlfriend comes over and sits by me with another young lady. They said they were 22. I don't know if I believe that or not, but they sit over
let me
here.
Guess, she looked
you know,
younger.
At the table.
She looked younger than 22. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought the redhead looked younger, but either way, I go to the bathroom. I come back, and Renato's sitting in my seat. So I sit next to the brunette, and then she gets up after a bit. And I chatted with Renato for a bit just about, you know, BS, chewing the fat. And then after I move, this man with a beard comes over. He's probably like 6 foot one. He's got brown hair, a big beard, Taliban beard, right? And he's got one of those, like, British golfing caps and, like, a button-up, like, shirt, a T-shirt, and he and Renato talk for probably like 4 or 5 minutes. He appears to speak French, and he's got a weird accent. Sounds like English isn't his first language.
Okay.
And Renato gets up and leaves after about 5 minutes, and then he asks me what I'm doing here. And then, you know, I say, I'm just journalist covering the demonstrations over at the headquarters. And he repeats the question. With, you know, a different tone. He's like, but what are you doing here? And he asks again. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I think I know what's going on right here. And he then proceeds to tell me that we are reading every ping, every text message, every article you write, and that the election has already been decided. And there's, you know, any effort covering the demonstration is, I guess, in vain. Is that what that meant? I'm not sure. And he also repeatedly asked me to go for a walk with him. And he also mentioned that the redheaded girl was, quote, with us. He said, do you think it's a coincidence that she is talking to your bodyguard right now? And he also mentioned later that he was a veteran, or he didn't say veteran, but that he worked in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And he also told me he was armed later. He said, one of us is armed and it's not you. But we began talking in circles after a few minutes. And I went over and I was like, okay, I should tell my friend now what's going on. And he's like, are you joking? No, I'm not joking. And he's like, okay, go back over there and, you know, start recording. And this is a British accent. Right? I like to call him Big Tex. And I go over there, and after a few minutes, he basically, like, phone camera ambushes him, right? And he starts acting a little bit differently. And we also, another thing I think that was noteworthy, we tried to take a picture of the young redhead and my bodyguard, and she was very resistant to it. And then there was this local dude, and I don't think he was part of it, and he had no idea what was going on. And I think he thought that I wanted to take a picture of him and the redhead. And rewatching that clip made me laugh when I rewatched it. But eventually I'm like, okay, we should go. This is lame. Right?
Well, this is strange. Wait a second. Now, this is very strange to begin with because, all right, you're in one place, you're covering stuff. Now, I got to ask real fast what it is you were writing about the election there in particular. If you could give us like a quick, like one sentence, a description of what it is you're writing about it. I mean, were you talking about how it's being manipulated, or were you speculating about outside influence on the election? Because, you know, now he's warning you about, we're reading your stuff, we know what you're doing, okay, and asking you what you're doing. You're getting a lot of attention paid to you in a place that I'm assuming you've never been before, okay, after getting a ride in a car with a diplomatic plate on it. This sounds like you're being maneuvered into a spot where either you're going to be positioned to cover something that's going to be staged on purpose, or they're really shaking you down to see what's going on, and you're kind of in a dangerous spot here. And quite frankly, if I was you at this point, I would have sought to take my bodyguard and say, look, or my security guy, bodyguard, whatever you want to call him. I would have been like, look, you know what? You and I need to not say anything and walk the hell out of here and find our way to somewhere else, because this is not a good situation, obviously. There are other people in control of the circumstance. I don't know what the game is with the women, but there's clearly some kind of game with the women. And I don't know if I want to be photographed with them, because, look, you don't even know who it is you're being photographed with. Again, you're not super familiar with everybody in Brazil, right? I mean, you could be sitting there with, the daughter of a drug trafficker, and you don't know it. You could be sitting there with the daughter of a politician. You could be there with somebody who is notoriously connected to somebody else, and they could try and use this against you and possibly even arrest you at some point or other if you're putting out some reporting that people that do have the guns, which, again, he made it a point to let you know, hey, we know you're not armed, we are. You know, I would say, look, I would try to quietly extract myself from this situation if I was you. And you're just saying, well, this is kind of lame. I don't know what's going on here, but this is sort of lame, right?
Yeah. No, I'm joking a little bit. But, you know, after a certain amount of time, I was like, okay, all of this is, it's just on repeat. The woman's watching, Kristen Parkhouse, the guy's talking smack, and... then he admits he's working too. He's like, do you want to continue to take videos of me while I'm working? Which I thought was interesting. It was like, okay, we're not getting anything else from this situation. Cause he wasn't really saying anything else. You know, I tried asking him questions a little bit. I started taping the woman, a park house. These videos are on my Twitter. Anybody wants to see them.
And she said to her, to Parkhouse, she said, "He's filming you." That's what he said to her. And then she said, "You know, stop filming me." And, okay, I was like, okay, this is, we should leave. And, so before I call the Uber, though, I forget my backpack is in Contreras' car, which is, I figure, an SUV, if I recall. And I go up to him, and I politely ask him, and I have my, because now at this point, I'm like, oh, shoot, he has something I need. So he has a, you know, a degree of control over me a little bit. I politely ask him, I was like, can I get my backpack? We're gonna head home. And he turns on a dime, becomes belligerent, starts, you know, throwing, you know, verbal abuse at me, and then physically starts pushing me. And it was like a third or fourth push, and my bodyguard pushed him on the ground, and then Renato Tibet kind of holds him back, and, you know, they kind of stop, and I just held down the Contreras on the ground for a few seconds, and he relents. He says, "Okay, I'll get your backpack." And we walk over to his car, which is very close to their car. He opens the door, grabs my backpack, gives it to me. And then he says, "If I ever see you again, I'm going to effing kill you." And then he walks back over and starts talking to Renato after I said to Renato, he just said he's going to kill me. And so I think he appears to be trying to calm him down. And then I began recording him again. And I said, "This is Miguel Contreras. He works for the State Department. He just lost control." And then he tried smacking my phone out of my hand. And after that is when I called the Uber. And then we kind of slipped out the back. But after the fight or the physical altercation, all of the assets were gone. The ladies were gone, and so is the bearded man, the beard. He said his name is Dominic. He wouldn't say his last name, but I just labeled him the beard. So
that's the guy you said had so that's the guy you said had the Taliban beard, right, earlier?
Yeah.
Okay, or whatever. Yeah, I mean, we know what we're talking about. Right.
Yeah. He, very racially ambiguous, you know. I mean,
right.
He could have been Israeli, he could have been French Canadian, he could have been maybe English and Arab. It's tough to say. It was hard to pinpoint what sort of group he might belong to.
Now, strange thing, is all this interaction going on in English, or are they speaking Portuguese? Because as somebody in my chat room pointed out, yeah, in Brazil they would speak Portuguese. Some people speak a tribal dialect of Portuguese, which is a bit different. And I only know that because I was there once. But as I was saying, though, was this all going on in English, all of this back and forth? And this, you know, like he told you, "I'll kill you" in English, probably. But, I mean, was all this other interaction going on in English as well?
Yeah, it was completely in English. And that was the thing. Of the few people, which I think was, let me see, about eight people that we didn't already have a contact with, some people we met during the trip, of the eight that spoke English,
right,
all but three were American. Or just appeared to be Western, shall we say. That's probably a more specific way to put it. And it was mostly on that night. Yeah, I think it was all on that night. So English speakers were very few and far between. They could understand my Spanish, but I couldn't understand their Portuguese. It's very dissimilar to Spanish and Italian and French, even though it's a Romance language. It's kind of similar to Romanian in that sense. And I had a hard time with the language for sure. But they could understand me, so that made it easier.
No, see, I had a Portuguese girlfriend in high school, and quite frankly, yeah, I know that language is not Spanish, and it is, it's got a weird accent to it, and it is very hard to understand, even if you are accustomed to a little bit of Spanish. That's something I wanted to point out there, and interesting that you're interacting with a whole bunch of Westerners that seem to be rather concerned with what it is you're covering, and also... This is a game going on here, and I'm not sure what the end game was. I think you made a mistake by telling these guys you were going to leave, though. I'm telling you, you should have quietly told your guy, listen, we need to slip out of here and just disappear at some point. You know, you go to the bathroom, you don't come back, this kind of thing. I think you would have been better off doing that because this whole thing that ensued where you ended up getting your backpack back, you might have not gotten your backpack. That's another thing. You know, and you don't know what was going on with this guy from the, quote, State Department, end quote. I'm telling you, next time you're in a circumstance like that, you might not want to announce when you see tension starting to boil up that you're going to leave. Because, yeah, I think you might have been able to slip out of there without this, without, you know, one guy getting knocked down and pinned to the floor. And, you know, thankfully, somebody didn't have, like, your guy who was, you know, there to assist you and protect you was actually doing his job, because I think you would have been really screwed if somebody had, you know, bought him off or decided that they had some leverage on him and, you know, hey, look, guy, you're from here, and guess what? You're gonna work with us, and this guy, we're going to do what we want. He might have been turned against you right then and there. And that would have been a bad situation for you to be in. I mean, I know you can try and get a hold of an Uber, but they could have taken your electronics and everything, and you could be sitting in Brazil with no way to contact anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think our government would ever do that, Chuck?
I know our government has. So that's why I'm saying it, because this is not like I'm imagining what could happen. I know this has happened. And I've heard stories from people who are like, you know, look, man, I don't ever want to talk about this publicly, but I barely got out of XYZ place, okay? Because, yeah, exactly. You're very lucky that the guy who was there, working to protect you and guide you actually did his job and wasn't either bought off by somebody or persuaded to just let happen to you whatever happens to you, because that has happened to more than one journalist in more than one location, and it especially happens easier to somebody who, no offense, Addy, but you know, you're the kind of guy, you're not working for ABC or NBC, so you know what I'm saying. You don't have $1 million lawyers ready to come and assist you, right? There isn't.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
You know,
about James Gordon Meek? You know, like, I don't think anybody still knows where he is. The national security reporter, he was house raided by the FBI, I think, on the 26th of April, and nobody's heard from him since.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories, and I'm telling you, some of them we don't even really know much about because, oh, well, we're not sure what happened to this guy. You know, it is just, you could have been one of those stories if you weren't careful there. And really, if you're a praying guy.
There's a YouTube channel that, it analyzes violent interactions, between, caught on camera, basically. And probably 40 to 50% of the videos are from Brazil. And usually they're, two guys on a moped or a bike, like a motorbike, and they just come quickly and then leave quickly. But, I mean, since they were Americans and American government employees, I wasn't really that concerned. And in the physical sense, I mean, it was, after the fact, obviously a threat. But it was more so about intimidation. And we called their bluff as well. And I think they just honestly lost control of their emotions. They look pretty stupid, in hindsight. And, right. Contreras actually deleted his LinkedIn, and we asked him for comment. Emerald asked him, the State Department, for comment. We asked them directly, Farkas and Contreras, and got no response. But, yeah. And then, we called some people for, advice, and former intelligence operator and former journalists who've been targeted, and they all said the same thing, that, you know, that they're like warning you, but they probably won't warn you next time, basically. Right. And yeah, you are in a foreign country and you're not protected by your American rights as a citizen. But, you know, there's people being held without due process. There was a man recently arrested in Chicago, sentenced in Chicago after 6 years in incarceration. It's a story I'm going to follow up on. But then, of course, the January 6th people. So, you know, it's happening right now in that sense. But, yeah, we left in a hurry. We were actually with some of our contacts, we're able to get an armed escort to the airport. So it's pretty pretty intense situation in hindsight. It's ridiculous. I don't know. It's kind of unbelievable to think of.
Well, what do you think ultimately was the terrible thing you did that set off a need for you to be warned? I mean, do you think that it was simply your coverage of the election? And tell us about that, by the way. You know, were you basically saying there's foreign interference here, or were you saying that, you know, that this is clearly not the will of the people being represented at the ballot box? I mean, what was the general overview of what it was you were publishing that kind of got that you think got the attention here of at least some guys who made you worthy of getting a warning, Addy?
Yeah, I only published one article, and that's because we were really gathering information most of the time. And, you know, I like to think of myself as a triple threat guy, kind of like Matthew Lee, for example. You know, he can write and report and, you know, do various mediums. Whereas most people only do one thing, like reporting is saying what happened. Journalism is writing what happened. And journalism, I think, is actually different from writing. But nonetheless, the one article that was published was actually about this militia. And I didn't know that, but Brazilians actually can own firearms. And this was implemented by Bolsonaro. People assert for various reasons. But one thing it has done is decrease the crime rate because citizens can legally own firearms. It's about 600,000 people and that can do it. And it seems to be a list that's growing. And now it is more difficult to obtain a firearm license there than it is in the States, of course. You have to go through a psychological examination, for example. But we actually went to a gun shop. Unfortunately, we only had literally like 5 minutes before we had to move to the next location. But our host, he was buying more firearms while he was there. It was pretty interesting. So we were looking actually at some Israeli weapons that they were selling. Like they had a Uzi and a TAR assault rifle, which is a bullpup rifle that is made by Israel. But yeah, it's pretty interesting because I actually didn't know that, that they could have firearms like that.
Yeah, well, and as you said, I mean, there was a bit of a surge in crime until this was instituted by the government. And it is a different process. You know, people that complain about, oh, I got to get a background check in the U.S., you don't realize that a lot of other places, there's a whole lot more hoops to jump through than what you have here. Of course, it varies state to state, as we well know, but it did decrease the crime rate, the moment that people started being able to purchase firearms in Brazil. All of a sudden, you couldn't victimize people automatically and not assume that they might be armed. And yeah, that slowed down a lot of violent crime in Brazil. So anyway, that's a true thing. And it is interesting. Yeah, of course, there's going to be weapons from all over the world that are going to pour into there. You know, we think of ourselves in the United States as having access to everything around the world, and surely we do. But quite frankly, when something like that happens, yeah, a whole lot of surplus this and that is going to get dumped right into there because guaranteed it's not too far from Brazil if it wasn't in the country already, a whole bunch of foreign weapons. So, yeah, I can imagine there were Uzis and probably weapons from all over the place that have been just dumped into that country now because it's a good opportunity for many dealers in that, first of all. Second of all, again, lots of weapons laying around just waiting to be picked up in certain places in Central and South America, as per usual. So, yeah, I could imagine that was an interesting array that you got to look at the gun shop real fast. And meanwhile, that's just one gun shop. I'm sure that there's new businesses popping up, new gun shops. I don't know what the requirements are to own one in Brazil, but I'm sure if you can pass all those tests, though, it's pretty lucrative at the moment. So anyway, so you got out of there and you left early. And, you know, did you wind up completing your assignment, you think? Did you get what you were looking for when you were there, or did you get totally sidetracked by all this?
Yeah, I call it a strategic retreat, which we actually both initially wanted to stay. But, yeah, we took the advice of the people with more life experience, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't feel it was a failure. I mean, in a sense, means you're doing great work, right, if that's what it warms. But, yeah, if they were out to they, whoever it is, we're out to take us out, it wouldn't have been, you know, we wouldn't have seen it coming for sure, and, you know, would have been vulnerable. But a dead American abroad is it's a big mess for a lot of countries, and nobody wants to get, you know, on the US side wants to get tussled with that if they can avoid it. You know, just looking at, like, the Mexico, really sad story about the, I think they're Mormon, right, in Mexico. And that was very, very much targeted at the women and children, which I don't think it was reported in the mainstream media. But that was a few years ago. So this is one example of that.
No, but if they were really serious about trying to shake you up, you know, you and your guy there probably would have both ended up with bags over your head. You would have been brought somewhere and, you know, guns would have been in your face for quite a while they explained exactly how you were at their mercy, and then they might have cut you loose somewhere at a disadvantage, you know, to really give you a good shake. This to me sounds like, you know, they weren't intense about it, and of course that later on gets denied, oh, this is just being made up by this person, you know, and all that. And they would have probably given you suggestions as to who was behind it, and you would have been temporarily kidnapped if you were a real, real, real serious threat to them, whoever they are. Okay.
In this case, they gave us their government emails for the State Department and the FBI in Kristen Parkhouse's case, and then for just the State Department in Contreras' case. I don't know if I mentioned this, but the redhead was trying to kiss my security officer the whole night and trying to get him also to go home with her for whatever reason that maybe we don't know. But
yeah, but you never know. Again, that could be to obtain some blackmail material. That could be to make you vulnerable because now you're totally on your own kind of thing. It could have been just to play and show you that can be done. You know, and again, you don't necessarily know what the motives are, but, you know, at the same time, there was clearly an effort to pay a little bit of attention to you. So you must have written something. You must have reported something that definitely got the attention of the kind of people that would do that sort of thing. And again,
yeah,
you know, all right. I totally understand.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to have one more thing. Burns. William Burns, CIA director, and Jake Sullivan both traveled there. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, within the past 12 months. And Burns basically said to Bolsonaro at the time not to mess with the election machines, which I think is relevant information.
Well, and there's a lot to go through regarding what's really happening. And, you know, in case everybody forgot, you know, notice how Addy keeps mentioning Bolsonaro. He was in the headlines there for a little bit, and now nobody's paying attention again, right? The corporate media has turned their back on it. And every time the corporate media turns their back on something like that, it usually means that either it's not selling well or, I don't know, maybe they were directed to look elsewhere. You know, so this leaves it to the independent journalist slash reporter. As you said, it's a little different when you're when you're a journalist, you're actually journaling the events. And of course, somebody who's a writer might have a variety of different approaches to what it is they're looking at. But journalist, reporter, I don't know. I still call you an independent journalist, and I may be accurate sometimes, but other times I'm not sure. You're doing other things, right? But in this case, you were acting as a reporter slash journalist, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's right. Sometimes I'm there to strictly to write. Sometimes I'm there to do both. It just depends on the job or whatever. But I gotta add a caveat if I could. I was basically a complete novice on Brazil before this trip. And I don't claim to be an expert after it or right now. So there's still a lot I don't know. I didn't go to a favela, for example, which is a ghetto. And, I was only there 5 days. So we'll see, though. I got to say there's a lot of, the misinformation being that it wasn't just a pro-Bolsonaro rally, but it was against censorship. And for a military audit of the election with all the information. Can't remember if I mentioned this, but a reporter was a journalist. He leaned to the right a little bit. He began to get a bigger voice in the mainstream, and they arrested him 3 times and tortured him. And he's actually in a wheelchair right now. And, there's this Supreme Court justice. His name's Alexander de Moraes, and he's he seemed to me to be the most feared guy among the crowd I was with. And I don't want to say people were scared. I sensed a lot of courage, but there was like a little undercurrent of paranoia. And I think that's why people were continuing to buy weapons.
Well, the thing is, when you have uncertainty and unrest around you, this is generally when people start purchasing more weapons. They want to assume some level of security for themselves personally. And of course, we've covered that dynamic in the United States. I'm sure you have too. Even in passing, you have to cover, weapon sales went up, like say when Obama went into office. The gun manufacturers made out real well because a lot of uncertainty and tensions started to rise up. And people bought guns. Now, when people are actually taken to the streets, again, as we learned in recent events here in the U.S., we go and buy more guns. It's just what happens, okay? And this is a hotbed of activity that, again, is at the moment, in my mind, being very much ignored by the larger media outlets. But it's still going on. The story in Venezuela is not the only one in that part of the world that is relevant. And, of course, these things are still going on. So last couple of minutes, Addy, I was going to ask you about Georgia and all that, but maybe we'll save that for another time. And we'll get you back on the show because you're going to have to cover this runoff, which I've got my opinions about, but I'm totally sick of the commercials. Okay, because I'm telling you. Even during children's programming, they're running commercials, okay? Brian Kemp wants you to know that he now backs Herschel Walker. They're running that thing 24/7 everywhere. I don't know who's paying for it, but anyway, that's going to be a whole interesting thing to look at in the postmortem is who paid for all this crap because we're getting inundated with these commercials. These guys have slowed down a little bit on comparing their domestic violence records. Which I like. And remember, I'm not rooting for either side of this equation. Actually, I'm not a domestic violence person. He is. No, actually, he's really violent. See, his staff is afraid of him. Yeah, well, remember his girlfriend that got her foot run over? Just back and forth. And they were doing this through commercials. Now they're on to something else, which is even stranger. Republican, allegedly, I've been a Republican voter all my life, and I don't trust Herschel Walker. And then the other one over there going, Warnock is just in Biden's pocket. So if you don't want to vote with that, don't vote with that. And on and on. This is what we're getting inundated with everywhere you go. I'm waiting to go to the Kroger and hear it over the loudspeaker is what I'm waiting for. Because I think that's coming next. Okay. Anyway, Yeah, I'm sure that won't cost much. They're running it on YouTube. Seriously, children's videos on YouTube in between your commercials, an algorithm where, look, I let my 8-year-old use YouTube, okay? I know that's probably not advisable, but he's watching clearly kids' videos, and in between, Raphael Warnock wants you to know stuff. Brian Kemp wants you to know. He trusts Herschel Walker. And I'm going, how do you insert this? I know these algorithms know better, right? It's just blanket everywhere with this. And early voting has started, but you're going to cover that in the upcoming weeks. And, you know, I the only thing I can assure you of is that there will be a debacle. And at some point, yeah, because it was close enough, the runoff is going to be interesting. But it's like watching after the playoffs of a football game, you know. These are the two teams that survived, so now let's see what happens, right?
I want to mention one thing about Georgia, if I could. Sure. Chuck, while I was in Brazil, I got word that GOP operative Brandon Phillips was arrested and charged with, I believe it was misdemeanor animal abuse. He had been under kind of scrutiny because of what looked like embezzlement of party funds. And he kicked this woman's dog, and the dog couldn't eat or play for several days. And so I did a story on it that I released independently because nobody on either side wanted to touch it. But MSNBC almost picked it up. He got arrested while I was in Brazil. So that was kind of interesting.
Well, look, I don't care, you know, which political operative group you're deciding to throw your shingle out for. Don't be a dick to a dog. Come on. Seriously, I mean, animals, dude. You know, I mean,
the fact that neither side wanted to do a story too is like, come on, man.
Yeah, well, you know, because you know what it is? It's a lose-lose situation here with stuff like that. Because when you point out some of the legitimate, I mean, look, not everybody is a clean living citizen. Okay, there are people that do stuff here that, you know, they don't want to cover it because it'll seem like it's a partisan thing, and they don't want to turn. And it's like, you know what? Why don't you just put the sunlight on somebody being a douche? You know what I mean? Is that not fair game anymore? So kicking a dog is something you want to ignore? Seriously? Yeah, that's the way it is in Georgia. But, no, I'm glad that they're actually going to do something with that guy. I don't care if he's a Democrat, Republican. Don't kick a dog. Come on. Anyway, Addy adds, I'm going to put in the show notes all the stuff. Go and support and follow Addy's work. Of course, as he said, a lot of his stuff has been published on, you can see it on Twitter. But I'm going to give you his Rockfin. Of course, you can use this discussion with me anywhere you want, Addy. I don't care. Add it to your stuff. You're constantly putting out audio, video. I'm going to have to now, with all this context, go and watch these videos. Because I'm going to see for myself this weird situation with the redhead and Contreras and I don't know, man. I'm happy that you got out of there unscathed, but I'm telling you, I think you got a little bit of an education about how to keep your back to the wall in certain situations, and I hope that you're going to take some cues from it just to protect yourself. I'm not saying be afraid. I'm just saying, you know, situational awareness is key to survival, brother, and you're going to need to employ that next time you get into one of these kind of circumstances. And funny thing is, if Addy keeps doing what he's doing, I have a feeling we're going to have more stories like this from him. Anyway, Addy, anything you want to say on your way out the door, brother?
thanks for having me, as usual, Chuck. And if you're around, I'll hit you up. I'm going to be in the Empire State of the South very soon, so very shortly. I'll be in the Peach State, and I actually haven't seen a physical copy of my book about Raffensperger, Peace Day Gate. So, if you still, the offer still stands, I'll take you up on it.
Well, I no longer have the couch I would have offered you, but we could definitely get together if your travels bring you to Macon. I'm here, and we'll figure out a way to get together at least.
I think that means Chuck has a girlfriend, everybody.
No. I don't have that. That's not a girlfriend. That's a wife, and I got an 8-year-old, and I got dogs, and So, you know, but we'll figure something out. But anyway, yeah, if you're near Macon, Georgia, we'll at the very least get together, man. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you a ring when I'm in town.
Excellent. Addie Ads, everybody. Like I said, I'm going to put you the show notes there so you can support and follow Addie's work. There's a Buy Me a Coffee link. I think I got his PayPal, his Cash App, all that stuff. And Addie Ads, we're going to be talking to you more in the very near future. Thanks, man.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Stick around, guys. Max Egan is up in the next hour. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
Do I make you nervous? Sir! Sir, what? Are you about to call me an asshole? Sir, no, sir! I'm calling you, Private. Sir, 5'9", sir! 5'9", I didn't know they stacked shit that high. You trying to squeeze an inch in on me somewhere, huh? Sir, no, sir! Bullshit, it looks to me like the best part of you ran down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up as a brown stain on the mattress. I think you've been cheated!
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold.
Silver.
The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
Hi, I am Jesus Christ, the most credible spokesman ever. And I listen to the Ocelli Effect because Chuck Ocelli has his shit together. And he kind of thinks like me. Sometimes. Let he who goes to Ocelli.com get stoned. Much love. See you soon.
Uncle, do you remember that time when Nibiru, also known as Planet X, was going to get within the gravitational pull of the Earth and cause mass commotion and chaos?
More that. More commotion. More confusion. It goes into the confusion thing. Hey, going nut, he's going back, and it's going crazy.
I hate being confused like that.
But that's exactly how he works it.
It is, but at the Ocelli.com radio network, you're never confused.
No, it's straight to the point.
Straight talk.
And I like that idea.
It's about time. Forget this new bureau stuff and listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
.com, and he'd get it right where you want to hear it at. Right straight ahead instead of ding-donging back and forth here.
Ocelli.com.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JP Sicilian, all of the guests that you have, how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have no idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ocelli.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say, I'll follow you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect here on a Wednesday, and it is definitely a wild card, but I'm always pleased, and we were just talking off air. It's probably been nearly a decade since I first engaged with this gentleman. I know it's been easily 8 years, but it could be more, and always been glad that he's been around. I have observed his work and appreciated it for a long time, and really happy to have Max Egan with us. So, you know, I'm going to give you the links to the Crow House, and I know I've been on the BitChute channel recently. I noted that him and I both almost simultaneously grabbed the COVID commercial from Saturday Night Live, which I found extremely ironic and funny. I've only stuck that onto the short attention span DJ theater stuff, where I play all sorts of fake commercials, and that one was perfect. Hey, you know what? You need a break from life? Why not get COVID? Yeah, why not? Oh, Max. First off, it's really glad to have you on. And, yeah, you got to point out irony when they shove it in your face. Immediately when I saw that thing run and come up online, I said, I'm going to just steal their audio. Nobody's going to stop me. So I had to run it. And I noticed that something came up on your channel, too, that had a bit of it. Anyway. I'm going to get into a bunch of stuff with you. Before we get into what's going on and what we really need to focus on, I've actually got a question from a couple of listeners about something, a piece of audio that somebody lifted from one of your shows that I've also used, again, on my DJ shows, where, honestly, if the world wasn't in such bad shape, I'd probably be trying to just get a job playing music and being a DJ somewhere. With the voice I have, I'd probably just be a hard rock DJ and enjoy playing AC/DC for the 5,000th time on some radio station. You know what I mean? This is the kind, I'd be doing the 10th caller. I'll give you tickets. You know, I'd probably be doing that somewhere if I didn't see the world in such sad shape. We are in trouble here, Max, but there is no reason for despair. First off, I want to ask you that question, but before we get there, how you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. It's nice to be here in Mexico. It's certainly better than being in Australia. The weather's fine. The people are wonderful, and I'm all good.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I never know if we should talk about the location you're in and whatnot, because I don't know, man. Australia's a strange place. I've got a couple of listeners over there. There's a media outlet over there that has now blacklisted me. Thank you. So, I don't know. There are odd goings on that continent. It is a continent, right? Australia? Yeah, it's a continent. There's some odd goings on there. But I'll hear out whatever it is you think, whatever it is you think other people should know that are not familiar with what's happening in Australia. But, at some point, somebody did a cover of the song Creep, which was played on your show, and then somebody lifted the audio, gave it to me, and said I should play it during my weird little DJ sets, and I have. And it's really, really funny. They changed the lyrics and stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. Maybe I had it on – might have been one of those. I have a lot of clips on my show sometimes. I think I kind of remember it, but I've had so many on that you'd probably have to play it to me to remember it.
You know what I'll do is I'll see if I can pick it up. I will. You know what? I have the power to do that. So I'm gonna grab that clip, okay, for everybody. And we're going to, because I know I have it here. It should be at my fingertips, at live radio, so it'll take me a minute. But, I'll get it and see if you can tell me what's going on there, because it's pretty funny. It's like there's some parts of it where there's like sheep are making noise and all kinds of stuff. I'll get to it. Anyways.
Things are pretty crazy in Australia. I mean, they're not as bad in some places as what people think. I mean, people are still pretty free. If you talk to people on the ground there, they say, well, there's nothing really going on. But in the background, they're putting up all this surveillance stuff. They're bringing in the digital currency. They're bringing in QR codes. They want to bring in vaccine passports pretty well all around the world. That was announced at the G20 summit a couple of weeks ago or a week ago. So, you know, it's all happening below the surface, which is what I've been saying through the whole scamdemic. I mean, half of it was locking people down to force them into compliance, kind of test the waters to see how compliant they would be. And while that was happening, while they're all in lockdown and made to wear masks and they're worried about this and worried about that and they're, you know, worried about losing their rights and they're worried about what's going on in Ukraine, they're worried about COVID, they're worried about all sorts of different things they gave you, worried about their children having to wear masks and having to homeschool, businesses closing, all sorts of crap. While this is going on, they're rolling out all these 5G towers, they're rolling out all these cameras, they're rolling out the whole surveillance system. And then as soon as we get into a bit of a lull between, you know, after the storm in Australia there, and they start to open things up a bit, they hit it with massive weather wars, flooding all over the place, which is all completely controlled and contrived. And then there's hackers. Oh, the terrible hackers have just hacked Optus, and they've hacked Telstra, and they've hacked Toyota, and then they've hacked the police database. So we need to bring everything into a centralized digital ID. So, you know, if you need a digital ID to go online, of course you'd want a digital ID. Why wouldn't you? What are you, one of the hackers? You know, so yeah, all really predictable. But this is what's going on beneath the surface while the people are kind of walking around saying, oh, it's not too bad. Everything seems to be kind of back to normal. They're not noticing all of the surveillance cameras everywhere and all of the surveillance everywhere, like absolutely everywhere, scanning QR codes, all this sort of stuff. And now, once they get it all in place, all they have to do is say, oh, there's a new wave, lock you all down again. And it's going to be an absolute nightmare if they get away with it.
Well, and meanwhile, according to the very few contacts that are friendly to me still in Australia, you guys are also suffering the same kind of thing that, well, it's tough all over, right? The economic war on the planet is definitely affecting Australia and the people there. You're certainly seeing the pain of inflation coming through and sweeping through at the same time, which limits people's options and is another control mechanism. I mean, look, if you can choke off people's ability to move around and to make choices, you can certainly limit their options. And therefore, well, if you've already selected, you know, it's much like I tell people about these things where, you know, oh, I know what I'm ordering off the menu. Yes, but you're not taking into account that somebody arranged that menu ahead of time. And they limit your menu options and they limit your ability to make decisions and choices and vote with your, well, in America, we'd say vote with your dollars. But to vote with, you know, the alleged energy earned from the system that you're supposed to be storing through your monetary device one way or another. Right. You know, and you begin there, but you also put in the surveillance. You also put in the limited options, you know, of other types of things. Okay, now you can't, this almost sounds biblical. You can't make purchases unless you have the proper markings. Okay, you know, so it all comes together and makes sense. And meanwhile, do you have time to pay attention to it because you're trying to survive?
Exactly. That's what they're doing with the digital ID and all that. That's what they want. You know, you're going to have a digital ID in order to get online pretty soon. I mean, in order to do anything, in order to cross a border, in order to even get online, you'll need a digital ID. And, of course, in order to get your digital ID, you're going to need to be fully vaccinated. This is the way they'll play it. You know, and if you don't do that, well, there's a limited amount of options you can do. You certainly can't spend any money anywhere or use their system in any way, shape, or form. You're not even going to be able to go to a supermarket or be free to travel because, of course, you're just a diseased bag of germs if you haven't taken the substances that the government wants to inject into you. It's crazy what they're doing, and it's a bit of a role model for the rest of the world the way they're doing it. I mean, different strokes for different folks. They're trying out different things in different countries, but it's certainly going ahead in leaps and bounds in Australia. And unfortunately, a lot of the people aren't noticing it because, you know, they don't really realize what tyranny looks like. And this is very unconventional warfare that we're facing, but it's warfare nonetheless. That's what's happening.
Right. And look, it's not to say, I mean, I know you mentioned things like the war in Ukraine and so on and so forth. And it's not as though you shouldn't be concerned about what's happening on the rest of the planet. But, you know, what is the old phrase? If you don't have your own house in order, then how are you going to concern yourself about the rest of the neighborhood? You know, it's pretty simple. And in America, it fascinates me because I thought we would have been, and this is one of those predictions that has not gone well so far, but I'm told, don't worry, stay tuned. I thought we would have been in the same circumstance that you are there. And yet Australia is much further ahead in this totalitarian approach and still using the the COVID-1984 kind of control mechanism, they're still sticking to that. The vaccines have been pulled back on here, even by the greater corporate entities that were starting to restrict people from being able to enter places and everything else. A lot of that stuff seems to have been relaxed here in the United States, and I didn't expect that. I figured, they had full compliance, it seemed like, or for the most part. I mean, nothing is ever total, but for the most part, in most places, we had an excellent rate of compliance here. I thought they were winning, and they seem to have pulled back and relaxed, and yet Australia is still going strong in that very same direction, the stuff that I covered that got me kicked off of YouTube permanently again. But, why is Australia well ahead of us in the United States regarding this? Do you know?
Well, I think because the population's so isolated. I mean, it's a big island. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to run. People can leave Mexico. I mean, America, they can come to Mexico. They can go to Canada. You can still kind of leave the shores. Different strokes for different folks. Australia is a very contained, low population zone. Australia is twice the size of Europe, and it's got a population of 26 million people. So they're pretty spread out. They're easy to control. It's easy to contain these people. They've been had most of their automatic weapons have been taken from them. The police have been completely militarized. Like, the police are next level brutal in Australia. You think police brutality is bad in the United States, you ought to see the cops in Australia. These guys are absolute thugs, and they don't care, and they will hurt you, and they enjoy it. So, the Australian population have been very, very cowed, and they're hitting them with everything. Like, they're hitting them with floods. They're hitting them with fires, just everything they can think of to get these people to comply. So it's a lot of them are just scared, I think, as well. I mean, they're genuinely scared of the police because the police are so brutal, and you can't ever talk back to an Australian police officer. They will hurt you, and they enjoy it. So, I mean, not all of them, but most of the good ones have left in the last 3 years. A lot of the good cops who actually called this out, there was a group in Australia called Cops for COVID Truth who started standing up and speaking out. But, of course, their best form of protest was to all quit the force in protest. And, of course, as soon as they quit the force and all these new psychopaths joined, you look at cops in Australia now, they look like they're ex-bikers. They got tats all over them and, really mean-looking people. So, yeah, they've managed to get away with it. I mean, you don't get a lot of news. There's only, a limited amount of television stations. There's not a lot of underground resistance. There is some, but not enough. So, and not enough politicians, not enough diversity in Australia, really. And so they've seemed to have, and it's the same in New Zealand. I mean, if you really look at Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, they're facing it worse than anybody else. And these are all part of the Crown Corporation, of course, so a lot of it comes out of England.
Well, right. I mean, after all, you are talking about all of the colonies, right? And, I mean, people talk to me about, well, Australia was a prison colony and so on and so forth. And I'm like, yeah, so you don't quite understand the dynamic there. Again, if you're talking about 26 million people, I mean, we've got cities with that many people in them here, right? Mm-hmm. And you're the majority of your population is all around the edges of the continent, again, spread out, though. And for a little while there was even the device being used of, well, the indigenous people. And let's see if we can get everybody afraid of them for a bit. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because there was, even news stories that, I'm sorry, looked extremely planted in mainstream Australian news about, the biker gangs and this and that.
Those were the last people who were left armed, the biker gangs. So they've got to vilify them and outlaw them. I mean, they were kind of our last line of defense, the bikers. Because all of these guys are just anarchists. They just don't want to be involved in society. I mean, sure, there's a bad element in there. There's a bad element in all, fringe groups, drug dealing and prostitution or whatever. But a lot of them were just decent guys who didn't want to be part of the system, who were quite happy to be violent about it if they had to be. I mean, you come at me, I'm going to come back at you. That was their attitude, which is kind of a good thing. Alpha males. There's been a lot of that squashed. I mean, fluoridated as well. The whole population is heavily fluoridated. So, you know, I mean, I've been trying to wake them up for years. I started calling the place Apothralia. And I waited until, like, I had two weeks left before they were going to close the borders, and I wouldn't have been able to leave without a vaccine, you know. So I left. And I had to get a business invitation even to leave. Mm. But I left with kind of 2 weeks to spare. As soon as I left, they shut down my bank accounts and did all sorts of stuff. And, you know, they actually came looking for me after I left, which was kind of intuitive. I left at the right time.
Right.
But, you know, it's been sad to see. There is a lot of pushback. There's a lot of good stuff happening there now, though, which I think is good and may even lead to something positive. And we're seeing it right around the world. I mean, a lot of people are getting it. A lot of Americans have woken up. I mean, there's still a lot of sleeping masses out there. But there's been a lot of pushback in the United States as well. The vaccine uptake hasn't been anywhere near as high as what they tell you it has. And so I think they're realizing, hang on, we've got a heavily armed population here, so we better not push things too hard. So what they're doing in the United States is breaking down a supply chain, breaking down a food chain. That's why they were destroying all those farms last year, killing all the poultry, while they put all the levies on diesel fuel and stuff so the trucks can't transport the food. Well, they've had Black Lives Matter and Antifa going around and burning down supermarkets and stuff like that. It's always the food stores, you know, they burn down. There's been so many food processing plants that have gone down, like 75 food processing plants, or even more than that, I think, maybe over 100 in the United States in the last 18 months. So you're going to start feeling all this next year. Next year, I think things are going to really begin in earnest pretty well everywhere if we don't manage to rein this in and get some control back in the hands of the people soon.
See, that's the thing is I do feel as though, Max, we are faced with 2023 being a pivotal year where we're going to see all this stuff amped up again. And again, I did tell you that in the U.S., it seems like, look, our politicians – you know, the politicians in Australia for a good solid couple of years seem to be taking to the air constantly to push the vaccine, to push, you know, a compliance one way or another. They were cutting down your abilities to move from one part of Australia to another, even not just leaving the country, but you couldn't cross borders within the country even without, you know, these QR codes and all this other stuff.
You couldn't cross them at all for a while. They just blocked them off. You needed permits. For a while, they just blocked them off altogether, and then you needed permits to cross the border for months.
Yeah, and that's just going from, you know, what we would see like as one state to another here, which when they tried to do that in the U.S., look, one thing that's a problem is that even if you cowed the United States population at a certain point, they become disinterested in even compliance, okay? Which it's just like, look, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And there's usually like this pushback that's not even like a conscious pushback. It's just a matter of I'm not going to comply because this is annoying. It's not a matter of principle even. It's weird. And it seems like they had no choice but to abandon doing stuff like that here for the moment. But I think next year it might be amped up again. And do you think this is going to – oh, I hate to even say this because every time I say something like this, when it happens, people go, oh, you predicted it. It's like I'm not happy about this. But, I mean, are we going to see a new dangerous wave, another variant that they're going to claim is sweeping through? So, therefore, we must return to something that is akin to what China was doing. And, of course – that's interesting, too. And the fact that Australia's supply chain, which has also been challenged, is completely different from ours. It's much more, you know, look, it's much more dependent directly on what goes on in Asia. So are we going to see something like that where there's going to be the new excuse, which will be, you know, some as yet unnamed, you know, COVID this or that or the third thing variant? Or is it going to be something else entirely where they say, remember COVID? Well, this is going to be a lot worse. And, you know, again, monkeypox, I don't think they could sell it because it sounds goofy. But they tried.
It could be any of the above. They could call a new wave. But like I said, different strokes for different folks. They might be able to get away with calling a new wave in Australia because they seem to be not letting that narrative die. And they're creating all sorts of excuses for it. I have floods and everything, all these viruses that are coming out of the woodwork everywhere, you know. So, but different strokes for different folks. They might do it just through the food chain. They might do it through civil unrest in the United States. The breakdown of the food chain. You're seeing so much animosity, like with all this Black Lives Matter stuff. You're seeing so many, you know, like the fentanyl in the United States and stuff like this. I mean, there's various ways to take out populations depending on the culture you're dealing with. They might be able to get away with new variants in some European countries and possibly in Australia and New Zealand. They might be able to get away with it in Canada. I don't know whether it'll cut it in the United States. Maybe in some states. Maybe in California. You can do just about anything in California.
In California, you can do it, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, they'll probably go for it. Now, I'm sorry for any Californians out there, but, hey, it's just an observation from visiting the place. So, but, you know, different strokes for different folks, but there'll definitely be something. And whatever it is, like I did a show a few shows ago that I called undifferentiated warfare. In other words, whatever situation they come up with, whatever situation is happening, they can find a way of weaponizing that situation against the populace in order to get more of their agenda through. And they're willing to grasp at any straws they see, depending on what public reaction is to things. Then they'll play things different ways. And anything that we try to create to get ourselves out of this, they try to co-opt it and weaponize it against us as well. So this is the way they're working. This is completely unconventional, undifferentiated warfare, whereby they're weaponizing any opportunity they have to be able to limit your capacity to respond and limit your freedom in the process and give more power to themselves. You know, when you can see the end goal of what they want, which is complete control of everything, massive depopulation and complete control of everything that's left, not just human beings, all life, all minerals, all resources, every drop of water, every blade of grass, everything. They want to control it all. When you can see that's what the end goal is, then you begin to see the stepping stones they're using and how they're turning any situation through the media being able to spin it into what they want. They're able to turn it into something that they can weaponize against yourself by simply changing people's perception of what's just happened. You know, you see an event happen and they think it's this, and the media will say, well, hang on, no, it's this. And then they'll convince them that that's what it was, and then things just keep going their natural course. So this is the way they're working. And once you can see that, once you can see, like I said, you see what the end goal is, and you see how they do this, how they tune, fine-tune and retune every single situation that happens and make it work to their advantage. Once you begin to see it, it becomes self-evident. And you begin to see it, like I've been saying to people, forget thinking United States and Canada and China and Russia. It's all one big thing. It's one big holding company. The entire earth is one big holding company. It's a multi-generational, multinational criminal cabal masquerading as a system of international governments and nations that are playing all the people off against each other through this whole concept of fear and the fact that we need governments to protect us from all these terrible things that the governments are creating, you know. And then people think, oh, Russia's going to come along and save us. So this particular government is going to save us from all the other governments. And people can't see it's theater. You know, if Russia could have gone in and saved the situation in Donbass 8 years ago, why did he do it right now when they need him? And all the people worried about Ukraine's just a big money laundering operation that they can funnel all this money to the Democrats, all the shit they just did with FTX and all that. And it's got people worried about there's going to be a war. No, it's the war's already started. The war is this holding company. It's the governments of the world who are complete usurpers, and they're carrying out a war of depopulation and control against the people of the world. And the way they've done it is by constructing this huge holding company with all these different department stores that all think they're a threat to each other, that all believe they need government. Oh, the Americans, we need government. Who? What for? Well, to protect us from the outsiders. Well, what outsiders? Well, you know, the Chinese. Well, hang on, the Chinese are just people. They don't want to attack you. It's the Chinese government. So you need the United States government to protect you from the Chinese government. The Chinese people need their government to protect them from all the other governments. It's all the governments facing off against each other, convincing us that we need governments to protect us from all the other governments. I think I see the answer here. You know what I mean? It's pretty obvious when you can see it. And when you can step back and really look at the world through those type of eyes, you go, holy shit. And it all just falls into place. And you can see exactly how they're playing their game.
Right, and it's a global agenda which is played out on a local level because not everything works the same in every region. That's why you have to adjust this. Like, honestly, I think you've already...
It's even more local than a lot of people think, because it isn't even down to local national government or local state government. It's down to your local council. That's where it's all coming in place in your countries. And you find that all of these local councils, like in Australia, there's a municipality association which controls all local councils, and that municipality association gets its orders directly from the United Nations. And you're going to find this in all countries. And then they have all the theater above it. So we place our attention on the state government and on the federal level. The federal government is simply the liaison between the other department stores. The state government is what controls that particular franchise. But ultimately, it all comes down to your local councils. That's how local it actually is.
Well, right. And here's what's going to get weaponized, I figure, in the United States, by the way. You brought up the fentanyl, and I marveled at how easily people were placed in a state of fear around Halloween time, because it was like, oh, they're going to put fentanyl in the candy. I marveled at how stupid people are, because it was like, look, if you're in the drug business, okay, on any level of significance, does it make sense to create 10-year-old customers? No, it doesn't, because they don't have money, okay? It doesn't make any sense. The fentanyl is going to play a role, yes, but it's not what you think. It's not the way that they're presenting it. I believe that by denial through the supply chain, all those, you know, SSRIs that people have become dependent upon in the U.S. and all those other sorts of drugs in the psychotropic category, I think that that is an excellent control mechanism, whether you increase levels or deny them to people who have now become completely dependent upon them, okay? And the opioids, let's not leave them out, are an excellent way to control. If you don't know that, I mean, come on. Just enter into a search engine, Opium Wars, and take a look at the history and understand how entire populations can get decimated, controlled, steered by this. Okay, and it doesn't mean everybody's an addict. It just means there's enough addicts to wreak havoc. You get it? So you could either increase or decrease or make dope more powerful or less powerful, and you can control the majority of the society by leveraging it through the vulnerable group. It's not that hard to figure out, okay? It's just not that hard to figure out. I think the U.S. is going to get leveraged by the drug situation here. And some
could
of it's
well be.
Supply chain. And again, it's multi-pronged, because think about that. Do you know how many people in the U.S. that if you encounter them, okay? And I know you encounter people from all over the world, Max, but... honestly, if you put any 10 people from the United States together in a room, okay, as long as they're not getting together as listeners of my show or something like that, okay, like just random people, you're going to find that more than half of them are dependent on some sort of drug. You understand? There is a drug addict society here that in some cases is reliant because of, you know, certain medical conditions, whatever, psychiatric conditions, alleged, you know, the mental health issue. There's a reason why they keep shoving that in your face. You know, whatever.
That's always been one of the biggest hypocrisies of the United States and of the entire society, is that they're against drugs, they say, you know, the war on drugs. And yet it's a government that supports the wholesale addiction of its population through pharmaceuticals. It's right. Incredible. The incredible hypocrisy.
Well, right. Yeah. And again, it's something that even people that are suspicious of the system itself and might even see that you're right about the fact that, look, you're looking at the liaison. You're not looking at the controller. You're looking at, there are franchises out there. Yes, you, the people, are actually the product, but you're also meant to be controlled and reduced or increased at will, so that you can be weaponized as well. The weapons against you and the fact that you are being weaponized and all of this stuff is being, you know, all this theater is being conducted so that, again, we continue to turn our attentions on each other, turn against each other, as opposed to looking at the people that are actually manipulating the population in the first place. Yeah, that's the way this works. Okay. It's perfect when you take a look at the fact that, yeah, you have the hypocrisy of the addicted society, which then in turn makes all sorts of moral judgments about, you know, well, gee, I don't want to be like the, you know, they stopped picking on people for cannabis so much in most places now, right? But all these other drugs, you know, like we can make all sorts of moral judgments.
And even, yet, even with the cannabis, though, you know, I think, like, they've done it all at that time for a particular reason. I think, you know, get people stoned so they're not going to fight back too much. I mean, cannabis makes you pretty laid back. Right. And also, I think with all of the hybridization of cannabis in the United States, they've kind of, they're working to destroy the spirit of the plant, destroy the soul of the plant. I think right. a lot of that hybridized weed that people are smoking, it's not good for you. And because it doesn't have any real soul to the plant. And like I said, I think they've done it at this particular time because, you know, it'll all go away. We'll get stoned and forget about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And as much as, you know, I mean, I smoked weed for a long time. I actually smoke hardly any weed at all anymore. I used to smoke 4 or 5 joints a day, like, you know, a couple of months ago. And now I can roll a joint and it'll last me a week. So,
I've graduated to that point, too, where at a certain time, you know what, the cannabis was a righteous medicine for me to use. And nowadays, you know, a joint might last me a month.
Yeah, same. That's what I'm finding. It's nice to have there if I ever want it, but yeah, I hardly smoke at all anymore. So and I didn't think, oh, gee, I've got to give up or anything. I just sort of stopped one day.
So yeah, it drifts away. And here's the thing is if you begin to evolve a little bit and you get, see, they give you this idea about medicine is like a permanent condition. Not necessarily. Okay. I know that, you know, big pharmaceutical companies love to create repeat customers and all that good stuff, but that's the interesting part about real medicine and honest medicine that comes from the earth is that, yes, it can probably cure anything you have. But it's not there for you to be a repeat customer. The earth is not dependent upon always increasing its customer base, okay? the pharmaceutical
funny
companies.
Funny how that works, huh?
Funny how that works, Max. You know, and even with the use of the psychedelics, which, by the way, saved my life, you know, the use of psilocybin, because, frankly, I mean, I was suffering from severe PTSD a couple of years ago. It had been collectively crushing me. And I, you know what? The use of psilocybin absolutely gave me back control of my life. Okay. But I don't need psilocybin constantly. Okay. I know some people have gotten into this, you know, a microdose, like a few times. And I am in so much better shape. Again, the earth doesn't need a repeat customer. It just doesn't need a customer base. Okay. You know what? The earth does not require you. You know, it's just you're not part of its business model. Anyway, I have that song queued up, Max. So I'm going to play a piece of it for you and see if you can remember where it came from, because I want to give proper credit to the artist that decided to create a parody out of Creep. And then we have a few more minutes to talk because I've only got you for this hour. And I'm so glad to be talking to somebody who's rational and actually sees the world as it is, Max Egan. But this cover, I've been playing it off and on the DJ sets, which I can only post on Mixcloud right now. But don't worry, all these platforms are going to turn around and do all kinds of weird things to all of us again this year. Promise you that, too. So who knows if it'll continue to exist that way. But let me just play a little bit of this for you, and for the listeners, we'll all listen to it together for a minute or two, and then you can tell me where it came from if I can jog your memory.
What do you want? What do you want? Hey, you want it? Look for contagion within the big light. Hold it together, the criminal world is so superficial. Nothing that's suspicious. Your religion.
anyway, it goes on. It's a whole version of that Radiohead song. But
yeah, I remember having it on the show. There was a video clip that went with it. You'll find it if I had it on. Like sometimes I have these on at the end of my show. I put a track on. If you can find the show that it was on, then you'll find the link in the show notes of that show on BitChute. That's all I can say. And I remember having that on probably, I think, before I left Australia. So halfway through 2021, I think I had that on.
Right.
So that's the best I can do, brother. So much stuff sent to me, so many songs sent to me. And I tend to have one on at the end of every show. If I can find something to put on the end, I like to put a tag on the end. So, and I always put the links below in the show notes. So that's the best I can do. But I remember having that on now.
Yeah. Right. And most things you can easily find by searching The Crow House. I'm pretty sure that's what your BitChute channel is called as well. I mean, I know I got it bookmarked, but isn't that what your BitChute channel is called?
Yeah, The Crow House.
Okay.
Everything you'll find me is generally The Crow House.
The Crow House, exactly. I think even the .com is still The Crow House. That's been around.
Yeah, thecrowhouse.com. You'll find The Crow House on Odyssey. You'll find The Crow House on, I'll tell you the Max Egan or The Crow House on Gab. I think it's Max Egan on Twitter. They still let me on Twitter, which is amazing. They banned me for about a year, then opened my account again, so strange. But it's either Max Egan or The Crow House. Mainly it's The Crow House, generally me.
Right. Max Egan's
Crow House on Telegram as well, at Crow House Official.
Ah, okay. Crow House Official on Telegram. Like I say, I'll put this in the show notes and all that. I mean, you don't even really need me to promote you, but the thing is, I will. Maybe you guys can search through the channel. I got this sent to me by a listener who was like, oh, I got this off of one of Max's videos. And, so I have it identified as you. And, you know, that's the way I have it identified. And I'm like, I don't know who did this, but whoever it was brilliant because, you know, you're a sheep instead of I'm a creep, right?
Yeah, and it had a good film clip to go with it as well. Like it had people wearing masks and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it was good.
Excellent. So anyway, we'll figure that one out. And maybe the guy who originally clipped it will contact me now because I can't even remember who sent it to me. But as with you, I mean, look, people send me stuff all the time and I don't know sometimes from where it comes from. And some of it's great. And some of it's like, you know, OK, I already saw this or heard this. Anyway, I love that you and I both simultaneously picked up that COVID commercial because I found that to be ironic. And
it was great.
You know, because
it was great. It just completely nailed it. I mean, this is all it was. And the way she went in there and said, oh, it was just like having a bad flu for a couple of days. Of course it was, because that's all it is. It's just your body having a detox. You know, it's one of the cruelest things they ever did to mankind was to teach you that your body having a detox is actually a disease that they need to give you medicine for, when all this medicine does is poison you. And that's all they've done now is that they've weaponized the common flu, like I said, undifferentiated warfare. Get anything they want, turn it into a weapon against you. Your body's having a detox, so they're going to call it a massive viral outbreak and a pandemic, you know, and half of that is what makes people sick, just the stress of all that. It's crazy, you know, absolutely crazy. But it's been an interesting run for them, and they've done they've tested the water, they've tested everybody for compliance, and I mean, we're pretty successful with this whole scam so far. And so now they're going to take it to the next level with this whole surveillance grid. See, that's what it's been all about. This whole pandemic has been about rolling out this surveillance grid, testing the waters while they can do it. Also, a lot of ritual in there, you know, getting you to wear the masks and all this sort of crap. The masks are also to perfect the facial recognition software because they need to be able to read a partial face. So they can still, even if you're wearing glasses and a beard or whatever, they can still pick it out. They still know it's you. So yeah, that's what a lot of this has been about as well. So the AI gets really good tabs on everybody. And, it's insidious. But they're definitely going to ramp it up next year if we don't, you know, call this out and continue to call it out and hopefully awaken a lot of people to stand up and reclaim their freedom.
Well, see, that's the thing, is how do they do that from the position they're in? How do we assert, you know, I have resisted so far taking any vaccination. I live in the state of Georgia, which is a little more lax when it comes to this kind of stuff. So it wasn't really forced upon me like it was in some other parts of the country. You know, when I wanted to return to the place where I was born, New Jersey, they had instituted a travel restriction, which, again, they couldn't do it on a national level, but regionally, state by state, they were able to do stuff like that. And New Jersey had a thing where it was like, you know, you're going to have to isolate for 4 days or a week or something if you come into this state. And, you know, for those of us traveling on a shoestring who don't have extra money to go rent a hotel room to sit and do nothing for a week, you know, it was like, yeah, well, that's undoable. So I wasn't going to go up to New Jersey at all during any of this time. I find it interesting, though, that you bring up the mental stress, because I think this is another key element that is ignored. You know, in a way,
well, it's a huge part of it. It's the main part of it, the mental stress. And look what it's done to the children. And that's the important part about this as well. If they get this through, like I keep saying, I've been saying for years, the kids who grow up into this are going to have no reference point for what freedom looks like. And the kids that have gone through this, the kids that have gone through the last 3 years, children that have been like 2 to 5 years old, or even 5 to 8 years old, that have gone through this, these kids are permanently damaged. You know, and it's crazy with what they're doing with all this transgenderism and all this shit now, getting kids to even question what gender they are after putting them through all this stuff. This is incredibly cruel. But and, you know, perhaps it's going to take a little bit more yet. Perhaps people are going to have to get into another lockdown or something before they're actually going to stand up. But we all need to unite and express a loss of confidence in our government's ability to govern. This is a criminal act. Everything that they've done is a criminal act, and these people have got to be removed from power, and we need to reclaim this world for humanity and for the children. Otherwise, we're going to be lost.
Right. And I just got a note from, but believe it or not, one of my few listeners that still exists in Australia, Ray from Australia, actually sent it to me, that creep cover. He's going to go look. So, anyway, back to the very serious point. You know how we know that this is true, though, is because I have children. All right. I have 3, Max. And, you know, my youngest is 8 years old. I have watched the warping of his socialization. Okay. And I know that that's true. But let's just say Chuck's wrong about that. And you don't know how your 8-year old's going to turn out. Okay, fine. Let me tell you about my 20 something year old children. Okay. They are completely normalized into the idea of surveillance. And you know why? Because they don't know anything about the pre-9/11 reality. They don't know of a time when you could walk out. And yeah, this existed, by the way. A time when you could walk out in the street and not expect to be filmed, not only by, you know, if you went to any sort of business or whatever, they have surveillance cameras, you know, for their safety, to protect their products, whatever, on the streets in general because of law enforcement. But also the fact that they've turned, you know, people into little brothers of sorts, where everybody pulls out their phones. You're being recorded, traced, tracked at all times. And you know what? They've also normalized carrying the phone, which obviously is a tracking device. So, you know, tell me how you escape this grid if you're anywhere near civilization. You don't. And my kids who are in that age group don't even consider that there was a point at which that didn't exist.
I know. It's freaky, isn't it? It's freaky. I still don't use a smartphone anywhere. I don't take them anywhere with me. I just don't won't use these things.
Right.
This is I've had below my videos for the last 15 years, I've had throw away your smartphone. The smartphone is the new world order, and people just can't see it. They can't see the forest for the trees. It's your slave collar.
Yeah. No, and people are mad at me all the time. You don't have a cell phone? No, I don't. I will not carry one of those devices. I refuse. I mean, I've gotten one temporarily when I've been traveling, just so I have a device that is independent as I travel. But as soon as I get done traveling, that thing's gone. I don't carry these. This is not a habit of mine. Again, you know, I probably shouldn't even use it for convenience if I travel, which is rare anyway. But that's the only purpose for it in my mind. Otherwise, you know, the people that carry it constantly are slavishly devoted to their updates and, oh, I get my news this way. No, you get what they're feeding you. Okay, and whether it's a Candy Crush or an alleged news feed or whatever, you know, your discounts on your McDonald's, whatever it is, all of this stuff is about collecting data and tracking you. That's it.
Mm. That's what the whole thing's always been about, and it, yeah, it's insidious. So yeah, we got a big battle ahead of us, brother. But you know, I have faith in this species to be able to come through. I think things are going to get so dystopian. I mean, the transhumanist reality that they want to bring online is going to be so alien to human life that real humanity won't even survive within its parameters, and yet it needs humanity as food. So ultimately it's going to kill its own food source. So we just have to make sure that a certain amount of real consciousness makes it through to the other side of this whole debacle, because we ain't seen nothing yet. Everything that's happened in the last 3 years has just been in preparation for what they actually want to do. So things are going to get pretty ugly. And I've been saying to people, you know, if we don't rise up within, you know, very soon and pull all this down and create the world we want, then you need to find a way of simply going grey and becoming unnoticeable, and just make sure that some element of human purity and human consciousness and real knowledge makes it through to the other side, so we can bring the correct history to those who follow, so people will actually know what happened at this time of our history.
Well, and also I think we need to simultaneously encourage that you actually have interactions with people.
Oh, yeah.
I know that can be troublesome, and sometimes, you know, it is difficult to work with somebody who is fully swallowed into the matrix or whatever it is you want to call it. But still, I think it is worthy of our efforts to continuously have actual interactions. You know, watching as again, this younger generation, and like I said, I got, you know, kids in their early 20s, watching them interact, they're dating through apps. They're getting together like almost as you and I would, because we're in different locations. Yeah, we get together for a radio show, we have a discussion, and we're using these devices to some degree, the computers or whatever, but we're not going to conduct our whole lives through it, okay? There are people out there that do that, and I know that you go out there and you try and disturb somebody who is in that world. It's not the easiest thing. I know this, but I think it's necessary. I think we need to encourage also that we actually interact with other people of our species, okay, as best we can, and in the way that we're designed to do, which is, yeah, face-to-face, in proximity to one another, actually having conversations, okay? Those things need to be preserved, because otherwise there will be no oral history that remains except that which is manipulated and retained by the digital devices. So,
well, yeah, I mean, that's what history's always been, brother. History's always been written by the winners, and we've got to make sure that the real history of this time does make it through. I think it's important.
I'm thinking that at some point, if things, you know, don't go completely completely down the tubes, okay, if they don't, I'm thinking they're going to look back at this time in history, and it'll be our, you know, great, great, great grandchildren, Max, that might look back at us and go, look at what types of fools existed at this time.
I think they will anyway. I mean, even if it does go sideways, I think it can't survive. The system they're creating can't survive. It's going to kill itself under its own weight. That's why I was saying that there may be a need for people to simply go grey and make it through that. Because ultimately it's going to fail. It's whether it's going to, you know, come online first and then collapse in a pile of nothing, or whether it's going to collapse before it comes online. You know, and they're pretty much on track with bringing it online. So unless there's a huge awakening and a huge pushback, you know, very soon, then it is going to come online to some degree. And in that case, if that does happen, I mean, you can always just make a stand and go down in a blaze of glory. But it isn't like what happens on the TV when you're forced to do that. You know, if you can walk the path of the warrior and simply get through to the other side, then I think it would be very beneficial for those who come after the time when this system does collapse. Because even if they bring it online, it's not going to last very long, because it can't, because it's going to kill its own food source. You know what I'm saying? So it depends on how dystopian it gets and how much of a pushback there is between now and then. But if it gets to a situation where you can't function within this system without, you know, scanning QR codes and doing all the shit they want you to do, then you're going to have to find a way another way of getting through it. So, yeah.
Right. Well, because the bottom line is that, look, in nature, there are parasites and they exist and they usually are at least wise enough not to kill their hosts. And the problem is that in this case, these parasites are greedy and they're unnatural. If they were, you know, Earth-based parasites, if they were really, truly part of the natural order, they would have at least enough sense to not destroy their food source. They can, you know, a leech does not kill you. You know what I'm saying? It'll suck blood, but it doesn't kill you. That's why it's unfair to compare these organizations, this thing, these, God, I don't even want to say people, but you know, these things in person form that are out
parasites.
There. These types of parasites, they're not fairly compared to leeches and parasites because parasites and leeches at least have the sense not to destroy their host. And it doesn't appear as though they do. And I'm telling you, the going gray and trying to survive on the other side, I don't know. You and I speak a little too much. We might not be able to go gray, but
I don't think I'll ever be able to, brother. But I'm just recommending that might be an option for people, you know. Just find a way of you know, having a plan B. You know, exactly. If it comes down to it, rather than go down in a blaze of glory, I tell you, it's not like on the TV. It'd be great if some people made it through to the other side and preserved the real history of what happened and some real consciousness to bring to the people that follow.
Exactly. Max Egan, everybody. And in the first hour, we had Addy Ads, but I'm going to give you all the links to go follow both of them. A unique Wednesday night, and I appreciate all you guys for tuning in because, after all, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
When, boy? When? Are you going to get your act together?
Gross.
Oh, good God almighty me. I think he's the Antichrist.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lies and lie. That's why I will not comply. Since back last March, I've had an achy, breaky heart like old Billy Ray Cyrus. I've been catching a case of the blues from the news around this damn coronavirus. Now they're telling us we gotta keep our chin divers up, even if we got the shot in the arm. Nobody's talking about exercise or eating food that's fresh grown from the farm. That's why I will not comply. Quit trying to take me to task, cause I don't wanna wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lie after lie. That's why I will not comply.
Show them a non-compliant sound like buzz. Oh, hell yeah. Now listen, y'all. The only way to stop the violence tend to agree, and you're pissed off like me. Stand your ass up and scream it out loud. Saying I will not comply. Quit trying to take me to task, cause I don't wanna wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lies.